Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 23, Worshipping Govardhan Hill. Text number 8. Sri Nandu Vacha,
Sri Nandu Vacha,
Ajanyo Bhagavan Indro,
Ajanyo Bhagavan Indro,
Meghastasya Namurtaya,
Meghastasya Namurtaya,
Te Vivarashanti Bhutanam,
Te Vivarashanti Bhutanam,
Vinanam Jivanam Paya. Parjanyo Bhagavan Indro,
Parjanyo Bhagavan Indro,
Meghastasya Mamurtaya,
Meghastasya Mamurtaya,
Te Vivarshanti Bhutanam,
Te Vivarshanti Bhutanam,
Krinanam Jivanam Payaha. Parjanyo Bhagavan Indro,
Parjanyo Bhagavan Indro,
Meghastasya Atmamurtaya,
Meghastasya Atmamurtaya,
Te Vivarshanti Bhutanam,
Te Vivarshanti Bhutanam,
Prinanam Jivanam Payaha, Srinanda Uvacha.
Srinanda Uvacha.
Srinanda Maharaj said,
Parajanyaha,
the rain. Bhagavan, the great Lord. Indraha, Indra. Megha, the clouds. Tasya, his. Atma Murtayaha, personal representatives. Te, they. Abhivarashanti, directly give rain. Bhutanam, for all living entities. Prinanam, the gratification. Jivanam, the life-giving force. Payaha, like milk. Nanda Maharaj replied, the great Lord Indra is the controller of the rain. The clouds are his personal representatives and they directly provide rainwater which gives happiness and sustenance to all creatures. Purport, without clean rainwater, the earth could not possibly provide food or drink for anyone, nor could there be cleanliness. Thus, it would be difficult to overestimate the value of rain. Text 9. Tam tatavaya manye cha varmucham patimishwaram Travyais tadreta sasidhair yajante kratubhir naraha. Not only we, my dear son, but also many other men worship him, the Lord and Master of the rain-giving clouds. We offer him grain and other paraphernalia of worship produced through his own discharge in the form of rain. Purport, Nanda Maharaj patiently tried to explain the facts of life to his young son Sri Krishna, but in fact Nanda and all the residents of Vrindavan would learn an astonishing lesson as explained in this chapter. Text 10. Tachcheshanopajivanti trivarga phala hetave punksam purushakara namparajanya phala bhavanaha. By accepting the remnants of sacrifices performed to Indra, people sustain their lives and accomplish the threefold aims of religiosity, economic development, and sense gratification. Thus, Lord Indra is the agent responsible for the fruitive success of industrious people. Purport. One might object that people sustain themselves by farming, industry, and so on. But as previously mentioned, all human and non-human endeavour depends on food and drink. How much are you going to get done if you don't eat? Anamaya. Which cannot be produced without ample rain. By the word trivarga, Nanda further points out that the prosperity achieved through sacrifice for Indra is meant not merely for sense gratification, but also for religiosity and economic development. Unless people are well fed, it is difficult for them to execute their duties, and without performance of duty, it is very difficult to be religious. Ya enam visvijet dharamam paramparayegatam naraha kamadvesad bhayalopad savayanapnoti shobanam. This religious principle is based on sound tradition. Anyone who rejects it out of lust, enmity, fear or greed will certainly fail to achieve good fortune. If a person neglects his religious duties because of lust, envy, fear or greed, his life will never be brilliant or perfect. Om Agyanati Mirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jinatasmaya Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Jinabhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dharati Svapadantikam Muktam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Gurim Yat Kripatam Aham Vande Sri Gurum Dinatayanam. So what's this all about? Krishna has a purpose Krishna has a purpose in everything that he does. He is a multifaceted, powerful personality. Parasya Shakti Vividhaiva Sruyate. He has a purpose in performing this pastime of worshipping Govardhan Hill. More or less, the final statement in the Bhagavad Gita is very simple. Sarva dhamam parityaja mam ekam sharanam braja. Abandon all varieties of religiosity. Sarva dharman parityaja. Give up all varieties of religiosity. Mam ekam sharanam braja, and surrender unto me. This is Krishna's message in the Bhagavad Gita, final message pretty much. Surrender to me. And of course there are benefits in doing that. Because Krishna is the well-wisher and friend of everybody. Suridam sarvabhutanam, he's the friend and well-wisher of everyone. Then if we surrender to him naturally, because Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead, then he'll protect such a person. Sarva dhamam parityaja mam ekam sharanam braja. Aham tvam sarva papebhyo moksha yasyami ma suchaha. I will free you, Krishna says. Moksha means liberation. I will free you, sarva papebhyo, from all sinful reactions. Sarva papebhyo moksha yasyami ma suchaha. Do not fear. Do not fear. So, Krishna's mission in his appearance is to establish, as Prabhupada says, exclusive devotion to him. This is Krishna's mission, to establish exclusive devotion to Krishna. What does exclusive mean? Nobody else. Mamekam, me alone, Krishna says, me alone. And of course he gives us then the methodology by how to do that. Manmana bhava mad bhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru. You know, always think of me, become my devotee, worship me, offer your obeisances unto me. Which is, you know, that's, it's, these are the basic ingredients of the process of devotional service. And the end result of devotional service, as is explained by Rupa Goswami, one should always think of Krishna, and conversely, one should never forget him. Manmana bhava mad bhakto. So, the residents of Vrindavan are actually Krishna's. The residents of Vrindavan actually don't worship anybody other than Krishna. So one might ask, actually, why are they worshiping? You know, why are they worshiping Indra? Why are they worshiping Indra? It's interesting to note, actually, that the devotees of Krishna, Krishna's Nitya Lila associates, are always, everything they do is in relationship to Krishna, and everything they do is service to Krishna. And but sometimes we see that the devotees apparently get in a bit of maya. Apparently they get in a bit of maya because here now they're going to be worshipping Indra, not Krishna, apparently. And the same can be said of Arjuna. You know, here's Arjuna, he's a Nitya Siddha Bhakta, eternal associate of Krishna, but then how come he gets into maya or illusion? Especially as we were discussing the other day, and as Prabhupada explains, one of Arjuna's name is Gudakesh, which means really basically he never falls into ignorance. So why is it, or how come sometimes we see that the Krishna's devotees don't exclusively worship him and appear to not follow his instructions? Well, there's a reason for that. The reason is because actually it's Krishna's desire, and it is part of their service to Krishna. It is part of the Leela so that Krishna can fulfill his mission. Right? Because if Arjuna hadn't fallen into maya, then how was Krishna going to be able to speak the Bhagavad Gita? Right? If Arjuna had not been in maya, then Krishna wouldn't have been able to give his instructions for the benefit of everybody. So in order to facilitate Krishna's pastimes, sometimes the devotees appear to go against Krishna. Just like an example that Prabhupada gives often is Jai and Vijay. Right? Jai and Vijay were given an opportunity. Okay, you can spend 7 births in the material world as devotees or 3 births as demons. Which do you prefer? They said, oh, we'll be demons. Because that means we can come back here to associate with you quicker. Huh? And of course, that was to facilitate Krishna's desire to have a bit of a fight with somebody. Lord Vishnu wanted to exercise his fighting propensity. In the Vaikuntha planets, nobody will fight with Lord Vishnu. Everybody's in awe and reverence. So in order to exercise his fighting because as Prabhupada points out, as the Shastras point out, actually everything that we experience in the creation ultimately has its source in the spiritual realm. Although in the material world it's perverted, it's upside down, but still you can see that it's a replica of what exists in the spiritual world. So in order to facilitate Krishna's pastimes or Krishna's leelas or his purpose, And sometimes the devotees will take on even an apparent antagonistic position. Apparently antagonistic. Look at Hiranyakashipu. Extremely antagonistic. What kind of a demon is he that even he'll poison his own son? Even at odds to the requests of his wife, the son's mother. No, don't poison him. Hiranyakashipu forced Prahlad Maharaj's mother to feed him poison, and even Prahlad knew that it was poison, right? And yet he took it. Amazing. When you think of what faith and devotion Prahlad Maharaj had to the Lord, how much he felt protected. In fact, you know, the devotee doesn't care. Live or die, it doesn't matter. Right? Bhaktivinoda Thakur sings like that. Marobi rakobi. Kill me or protect me, I don't mind. Amazing when you think about the mood of surrender in the Nitya Lila associates. So here we see the cowherd men are explaining to Krishna. Krishna wants to establish his position as the supreme. Many reasons actually. Krishna knew the desire of the residents of Vrindavan and how they wanted to be with him always. Especially the gopis. And so in engineering this pastime, Krishna created a situation where the residents of Vrindavan, who ordinarily couldn't be with him 24 hours a day, yeah, that was their desire. The Shakas, his boyfriends, wanted to be with Krishna 24 hours a day, but unfortunately he had to go home every night to take rest. So they couldn't be with him all of the time. And the gopis, they wanted to be with Krishna all of the time, but due to social constraints and other factors, they can only meet him at the dead of night, right? In the forest, secretively. And of course, Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda and the elderly gopas and gopis, they wanted to be with Krishna also 24 hours a day, but they could only really look after him when he was at home, when he went out in the forest herding the cows, and they couldn't be with him. So they felt, everybody was feeling at some point in time great separation from Krishna. So Krishna arranged this pastime so that all of the residents of Vrindavan's heartfelt desire to always be with Krishna 24 hours a day could be fulfilled. And so therefore he creates this lila whereby Indra is another purpose, to subdue Indra's, to curb Indra's pride, right? Another, so many purposes served by the one activity. But as Prabhupada points out in the beginning of this chapter in the Krishna book, main purpose is to establish exclusive devotion to him, not to this demigod or that demigod or another demigod, but exclusive devotion to Krishna. Why? Because Krishna is the source of everything in any case. Aham savasya prabhavo matasavam pravatate iti matbhava jante mam buddha bhava samanvitaha. One who understands Krishna as a source of everything, as the protector of everyone, engages themselves in devotional service. So that was the reason why the residents of Vrindavan, Nanda Maharaj and the cowherd men, were preparing to perform the sacrifice for the pleasure of Indra. Indra is the personality in charge of the rainfall, the person behind the machinery that produces the rain. Because this is a little difficult for the so-called educated, sophisticated persons in this day and age to appreciate that there are personalities behind the working of everything. But the demigods, especially personalities like Indra, Chandra, Surya, the prominent personalities, they're in charge of the workings of the universe. Just like, you know, we have a minister in charge of waterworks, right? For example, a minister in charge of sewerage. Actually, I don't think they have a minister entirely dedicated to these things, but there's certainly a minister in charge of them. And he makes sure that things work properly, that there is no obstruction to the workings of the municipality. So similarly also within the material affairs, there are personalities who make sure that there's no obstruction to the workings of the creation. They're like the ministers of Krishna, who's the prime minister. He's the first minister. And so therefore it is not inappropriate in one sense to worship Indra. It is not inappropriate, just like we would be respectful to anybody, and especially somebody in a high position who has an important responsibility, then we would give them respect. Because as a result of that, you know, that position, by dint of that position, then we would respect, like we would respect the Lord Mayor, or we would respect the Prime Minister of the country. It's proper to do that. So it is not improper to worship Indra, actually, or certainly be respectful. And the devotees are recommended to offer their respects to these personalities, but not at the expense of their worship to Krishna. The respect, the awe and reverence, if you like, and the offerings of sacrifice and so forth to the demigods is appropriate when we understand their position in relationship to Krishna. And that ultimately all of the worship that is provided to the demigods is actually meant to be offered to Krishna, because he's the source of the potencies that are given to the demigods. He's the prime minister. So therefore, Nanda Maharaj is explaining. We are offering respect to Maharaj Indra. Even actually it's mentioned here, Bhagavan Indra. He's described as the great Lord, Bhagavan. Parajanyo Bhagavan Indra, the great Lord Indra who provides the rains. Meghas tasyatma murtaya, the clouds are his representatives. Nice example or metaphor. Te viva, and as it is pointed out here, you know, without water, who can live? You know, there are protests in the city at the moment. There are people protesting and warning that in due course of time there will be wars fought over water. Right? Even now in Mexico, there's not enough water to go around. And the poor people have the water pipes running through their ghettos and their slums. Right? And naturally, you know, what do they want to do? They want to drill a hole in the pipe and steal the water. But if they do that, they'll get punished. Right? So it's people fighting over water. And even, you know, we can appreciate it living in Australia, that how precious water is, actually. You know, when your dams are only half full, and then they put on the water restrictions. Can't water your garden, you can't water your lawn. So everybody requires water to live. As is mentioned by Nanda Maharaj, a nice meditation, you know, none of us can survive without something to drink and something to eat. None of us can survive. Imagine if you couldn't get any drinking water, what would you do? extremely critical situation. No drinking water means no life, basically speaking. It's only a few days you can survive without drinking water. So how important is Indra, especially to the farmers, when you think about it? Without the rains, there can be no production of grains. There can be no production of milk, as it is mentioned in that verse that we first chanted. Prinanam jivanam payaha. Paya means milk. Jivanam means life-giving force. Translated here, like milk. Without milk, without water, without food to eat, which is all dependent upon rain, nobody can exist. So because Indra is the direct cause, or the immediate cause of the rain, actually the clouds are the immediate cause of the rain, but the clouds are his representatives. So therefore it's appropriate to worship Indra. But, as Krishna is about to point out, it is not necessary to worship Indra if one recognizes that Indra is just a menial servant, like the rest of us, of Krishna. This is one of the reasons why we enter into, you know, the Varnashram system has different stages of life. And the first stage is the Brahmachari stage. And one of the reasons that we enter into the Brahmachari ashram is to learn that actually we're just a servant. A minion. Right? A minion. You know what minion means? Insignificant, yes. Insignificant. Menial. Servant. It's a very important lesson to learn. So that's what Krishna wants to establish. That actually everybody, even big Bhagavan Indra, right, is actually also a servant. We're all servants, actually. Ekale Ishvara Krishna Arasava Britya. There is one controller, that's Krishna, Ekale Ishvara. Arasava Britya. Everybody else is a servant. So even though Indra has a very, very big and powerful position, in that practically speaking he maintains and supports the whole universe as a result of the rainfall, and provides then the food and the drink for everybody to be sustained, ultimately Indra derives his power from Krishna. Going red, it's losing its potency. Okay. And interesting, Maharaj Nanda gives another reason why they're worshipping Indra. Because by worshipping Indra, then people are able to follow the Trivarga. Trivarga, three paths. Because usually there's a fourth path also recommended, but he's making this point. Trivarga phala hetave. It's the cause of persons following the paths of religiosity, economic development, and then sense gratification. It's a good reason actually to worship Indra, right? You can't be religious without the water and the milk and the grains. They're very convincing arguments, actually. But as is mentioned here in the purport, Krishna is having the facts of life explained to him by his father. Right? These are the facts of life. If we, and especially for the cowherd men, If we don't have rain, then we can't eat. And if we can't eat, then how can we be religious? Right? Some fairly convincing arguments as to why we should worship Indra. But in fact, as is pointed out here, the residents of Vrindavan will learn an astonishing lesson on our behalf, so that we can also learn the lesson. Ultimately, whilst we should be respectful to the demigods and not neglect them in recognising their position, ultimately all recognition, all respect, all sacrifice, all worship, all endeavour actually, yat karoshi, yat ashanasi, yat jahosi, dadasi, yat. It's explained by Krishna in the 9th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Everything we do, yat karoshi, yad ashnasi, whatever we offer, whatever we give away, yad jahoshi dadati yat, or dadasi yat, whatever we give. Everything should be done as an offering unto me, Krishna says. So, in order to be appropriately religious, in order to fulfill our sense gratification, in order to economically developed, and to ensure our liberation, which is the most important thing actually, by worshipping Lord Indra and the demigods, one cannot be liberated, because the demigods themselves are also residents of the material realm. They're also residents of the universal domain, which is overseen ultimately by Krishna. So if one wants to be successful in the Trivarga, actually, but not only the Trivarga, but the four paths, religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, and ultimately in liberation, one has to surrender to Krishna. This is the ultimate. And of course that will be taught here. That's the ultimate religious activity. And by that activity alone, one will be completely successful. We don't have to worship anybody other than Krishna to be successful. Very simple. So does anyone have any comments or questions on any of these points? Maybe not. Indra, well, son, you know, all of our banana crop for this year just got consumed. Sorry? Let's see if we can get that. Let's see if that other battery's. The other battery's got. Just pull it out. It's probably got 10 minutes worth in it. It's an interesting observation, actually, because, you know, in this day and age, practically speaking, there's no sacrifice performed, or very little, for the demigods. And if there is any sacrifice performed, then, you know, there are the devotees performing the Sankirtan Jagya, which is, you know, there is quite a bit of Sankirtan going on, and so therefore quite a bit of sacrifice. But certainly the behaviour of the people is quite against religious principles, and you know, when there's reactions, or when there are disasters and so forth, caused by the elements, described in the Vedas as the Adi Atmik, no, Adi Daivika Klesh. Klesha means miseries. Miseries inflicted upon us by the Devas in the form of flood, famine, you know, cyclones, droughts, all of these sort of things. Right? Adi Daivika Klesh. So, you know, the reactions that people get as a result of their impious activities are probably being somewhat mitigated by the fact that there's a performance of jagya by the devotees. So, you know, we shouldn't be surprised that there are disasters befalling people because the behavior is very irresponsible and quite brutal. You know, Prabhupada makes the point that the Kshatriya's vision is meant to be one of not just seeing his own family, but rather he sees the citizens of the state, which includes the animals as well, as being the relatives, if you like, right? And yet we live in a society where our relatives, the animals, the sheep and the cows and so forth, they're rounded up and put into, you know, abattoirs and then butchered wholesale. And this is incredibly brutal behaviour. You know, in Australia, what is it, 200,000? Was it 200,000 or 100,000 abortions in a year? That means we kill our own children. You know, so we're so insensitive. What to speak of the animals? We kill our own children. As a society, of course, the devotees don't. But so, what kind of reactions could we expect from that kind of behaviour? You know, modern man likes to think there's no connectivity, you know, between what we do and the reactions that we get. But of course, the Vedas teach us otherwise. So, you know, that there's a hurricane and, you know, there's some, you know, our banana crop just got devastated and $50 million worth of avocados were destroyed. You know, we're probably getting off lightly to what we, you know, deserve in many respects. What to speak of, no, you know, there are no offerings of sacrifice to the demigods or whatever, none whatsoever.
Can you explain why it is that those who are performing sacrifice are also suffering the actions of the greater society?
In what way?
In terms of scarcity.
I guess we have our... you know, even though it's mentioned you know, that a person will have all of their sinful reactions removed if they surrender to Krishna, still the example is given of a fan which is being driven by electricity. If you pull out the plug, still the fan keeps spinning. Right? So even for the devotees, they're performing sacrifice, and as a result of sacrifice, they surrender to Krishna. And as a result of that surrender, they will be liberated from the reactions of their past deeds. But still, you know, in the process of being fully liberated, or becoming fully liberated, there is still the winding down of the fan, if you like, right? And of course, you know, even the devotees sometimes will accept the apparent reactions of material existence in order to fulfill the mission of Krishna, right? Even the devotees will apparently accept the inconvenience of existence in the material world for service to Krishna. And in fact, they don't feel the pains and sufferings of material existence like a materialist does. their perspective on the, whatever reactions they might get is completely different. And so therefore they don't mind. In fact, they, you know, their prayer is, you know, kill me or protect me, I don't mind. Let me take birth in the material world, or let me, you know, let me take birth in the hellish planets or in the heavenly planets. It doesn't matter. What is it? Tulyarta? Tulya? Tula. Tula means to see everything equal. Right? Just like we have the word Atul. Atul. Atul Krishna. Which means incomparable Krishna. You can't compare anything to him. Atul. Without comparison. But Tula means equal. Compare, you know, so the devotee doesn't mind if he's in the heavenly planets enjoying or if he's in the hellish planets suffering. If he has an opportunity to render service to Krishna, and that's the service that Krishna wants him to perform, he doesn't mind. Has a completely different perspective on so-called suffering. And so he says, well, you know, whatever, if that's what Krishna wants, I'm only getting a token of what I deserve in any case, so let it be. She'll be right. Yes,
in order to go back to Godhead, does one need to become a brahmachari or sannyasi or whatever? Or he can go back to Godhead in dress as or he can purify himself.
You can go back to home, back to Godhead in any ashram. So long as you're a pure devotee, you can. It's not, you know, okay, all brahmacharis line up here, and the householders, no, you're out. Not allowed, sorry, can't come in here. It's a matter of consciousness, your consciousness. One has to be Krishna conscious. What does Bhaktivinoda Thakur say? Grihe tako bane tako sada bolo hari tako. Is that right? Whether you're a griha tako, whether you live in the household, or vane tako, whether you live in the forest. Sada hari bolo, just always chant. That's his recommendation. Sada bolo hari tako. Wherever you live, chant Hare Krishna. That's his instruction. So, doesn't matter. Wherever one is, one has to be an honest sweeper in the street. Right, not a show bottle. And you know, Lord Chaitanya, Kiba Vipra Kiba Nyasi Sudra Kene Noi Ye Krishna Tattva Veta Se Guru Hoy. Whether you're a sannyasi, Kiba Nyasi. What is it? Kiba Vipra, whether you're a Brahmana. Kiba Vipra, Kiba Nyasi, whether you're a Sannyasi. Sudra Keni Noi, whether you're a Sudra. As long as you know the science of Krishna, then you can become a guru. Right? So it's not, there's no restriction. One has to know, basically, one should be Krishna conscious. So then it doesn't matter. And so, you know, and to teach that, Ramananda Roy, who's ostensibly a sudra, was instructing Lord Chaitanya, who's a sannyasi and a brahmana, right? Just to teach, you know, that we can take gold even from a filthy place. Good instruction can come from anybody, actually. So a good example can come from anybody. Good instruction, good example can come from anybody, whether they're a householder, brahmachari, sannyasi, whatever. Householders just have more headaches. That's all. And as a result, more distractions. That's why, in one sense, it's recommended that one try to avoid the distractions and disturbances that come with that ashram. That's what makes it more difficult, perhaps, but it doesn't mean that it's impossible. Huh? And even then, you know, many brahmacharis, they're just thinking, oh, when am I going to get married? Which is another problem, another burden. Right? And then the householders are thinking, oh, when am I going to get out of this mess? They're lamenting. Huh? So, that, you know, what's required is a sincerity in any ashram to be a devotee. You know, despite the circumstances, the difficulties. Yes, Milton.
Obstacles are like putting away the devotees so that we can do purification and stuff like
that. Yeah, generally the obstacles are our own creation, to be honest. Yes. You know, if you're getting some reaction from past misdeeds, where's that coming from? We tend to see the obstacles, oh, it's my mind, or it's, oh, it's this difficult situation, or whatever. But we don't see that the prior cause is our choice to come into the material world and live, you know, to be separate from Krishna. We see the obstacle as being, you know, separated from ourselves or separated from Krishna, right? So ultimately the difficulties that a devotee experiences are as a result of the fact that we've, you know, we chose to come into the material world. That's our mistake. And certainly we can better appreciate obstacles if we see them as being a test sent by Krishna to help us. Okay, let's finish here. Kantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.